August 17, Wednesday. I'd like to welcome everybody to the subcommittee, the rural subcommittee of the Alaska Energy Security Task Force. We'll be introducing our special guests. If you can introduce yourself, that'd be really great. Starting with Michael.
So from the contractor team, it's Michael Yaffe with Michael Baker, and then joining me, my colleagues are Karin, Serby, Lauren, and then we're also joined by Black and Beach, so I'll let them introduce themselves.
Okay, this is Papa from Black and Beach. Joining me on the meeting is also Mandy Jiang and Saren Perk.
Okay, thank you. Can you please call roll for the subcommittee members?
Sure. I also just want to point out, I know Tim Sandstrom is here as the AEA observer. And
yep.
Then the just going through the member list, Jason Bruin, Niels Anderson, and then Garrett Boyle. Aaron Whitney, please announce yourself if you are here, just for the record. This is being recorded, and the audio will be posted publicly. If not, I think we do have other kind of members that join that may not have announced themselves. So just want to go through the list for those for the record if you're attending. I see Alba Bryce is present.
Yes, present.
And then Jessica Broker.
Yes, present.
And then Katie Conway.
Yes, present.
Okay. And then Andrew, I'm happy to turn it back over to you, or if you'd like,
you.
I'd like.
For today's agenda, we have identifying our strategies, the action worksheet. Then the number four would be next steps with member assignments. Support of the contractor assignments, meeting date of Thursday, August 24, and then adjournment. We'll go on to number three, identifying strategies. Michael?
Okay, great. I'm going to share my screen and just bring up the kind of the action tracking sheet that you pull it up. I actually have, so this is the action tracking sheet that we had, and let me know if you can see my screen. This is what, during the breakout sessions of the task force, we kind of went through and prioritized some of these actions. This hasn't been updated since then, but just the energy symposium that just occurred, for those that have missed it, there was, excellent presentations on, the current state of the data, why data gaps exist. And then also just kind of an overview of the recent kind of state economic development plan. And through that process, the economic development plan, they've identified, I believe it was 49 actions in the plan statewide for economic development. And some of them relate specifically to energy. And they are going to be posting that presentation online on the AEA website. And in that presentation, they highlight which actions in that plan relate directly to energy. I don't have a current copy of that presentation, but what I did do is I downloaded, and with the co-chair's permission, I downloaded the actual matrix and tracking sheet of actions, and I can post this on the Task Force SharePoint site. And some of these might be worth kind of just talking through at a high level. For inclusion within the rural subcommittee's actions. This meeting just ended, so I don't have this organized. This is the actual kind of appendix from the action. And I have highlighted just high level, kind of the actions in the plan, but I wanted to pause here just to make sure Andrew, Clay, if this is a okay direction to take the meeting or if there's other items that you may want to kind of address up front from the previous meeting and the actions that were discussed there.
Let's find our fish.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. So overall, the plan, the economic development plan kind of has these high-level objectives, and each of the objectives, they kind of address individual actions. Just due to the size and nature of this, I'm going to just quickly scroll through, but this will be a resource that will be publicly posted, and we can always revisit. But just based on, you know, what was identified, some of the reoccurring themes that come up on the rural subcommittee, and Andrew, I think, you know, making the connection, you know, of transmission lines, you know, to outside the rail belt, you know, if it's economically competitive or if there's benefit cost analysis to it, I think that was noted in the plan. So there's some definitely actions that are kind of can be integrated, and overall plan integration between the two plans, there's synergies. And again, this is the second time I'm seeing this, so I'm not too prepared because this was just presented. But I'm going to just slowly keep this on the screen and let me know if you need me to zoom in. There's certain categories that I definitely want to talk through one by one, but the ones that we've seen so far are more kind of general. I know for rural, it's going to be focused more on, you know, some of the industries like mining and then the alignment with the actions that we've identified so far. So let me just scroll through. I started highlighting the ones we wanted to highlight. So there's a whole objective on energy innovation. Next generation renewable energy solutions throughout rural Alaska, execute pilot and demonstration projects for energy technology, deploy clean energy sources, conduct and implement statewide strategic plans for energy development, that's this initiative, conduct a study on state level energy incentive programs across the U.S., support establishment of a Alaska hydrogen hub, carbon capture, utilization, and storage. And scroll through. And I'm happy to also put a link to this in the chat for this meeting. Harbor infrastructure is more coastal. Reduce the cost of energy for industrial and residential use. So actions, build natural gas infrastructure to increase the supply of natural gas to the interior, leveraging public and private investment. Where feasible, install renewable energy systems such as wind, tidal, geothermal, and solar to reduce power costs in rural areas. Use industrial access roads and bulk purchasing power to supply low-cost fuel to rural communities located near natural resource development sites. Expand transmission lines to connect outlying communities to the rail belt or other regional grids where a cost-benefit analysis indicates a positive value. Utilize federal infrastructure funds to retrofit commercial and industrial buildings for greater efficiency. Build new and upgrade existing hydroelectric facilities, provide low-cost, low-emissions power, fully implement commercial property assessed clean energy financing to help commercial building owners increase energy efficiency, reduce costs at the local government level. So I just wanted to pause here. I know I just kind of rattled off a few of these. This plan also identifies kind of a timeline within the next 6 years. This plan, the range of this plan looks ahead at the next 5 years. That was their timeline. And they identified priority outcomes and potential lead energies. So it's very similar to kind of the process that we're going through with this plan. And I just wanted to pause here. Just, you know, some of these actions that I listed do relate to rural, and I know with our actions, we've kind of went a little more detail, but if there's actions listed in this plan that, you know, are appropriate for the energy plan, we can definitely include them and expand upon them. But just wanted to pause here and open it up for comment.
Any comments? From public too?
I'm sorry, Andrew, what was that?
Public comments are fine too.
If not, I can continue on with some of these that are listed.
Yeah, I just don't like the verbiage, feasible install renewable energy systems such as wind, tidal, geothermal, and solar to reduce power costs in rural areas, you know. It should be everywhere, even relevant, you know.
Mm-hmm. So let me just throw this out there. We have this resource. We have this plan. I went through and just highlighted these just to help with the conversation today. We are going to get the PowerPoint that they presented at the Energy Symposium that highlights these actions. You know, next steps, we can, you know, look at that PowerPoint and, you know, mark it up and revise language if we want to include these actions in the plan, but I just wanted to understand, you know, especially from Andrew, Clay, and, you know, members, what's the best way that, you know, Michael Baker and Black of Each, we can support you on this, knowing that we have these actions. Would you like us to kind of roll the ones that relate to rural as,
oh,
you know, draft actions?
And, you know, expand transmission lines to connect every area, you know. We can connect from Cordova, because Cordova has really good tidal and hydro power capabilities, you know. We can connect out west to different kinds of power sources, too. But as long as we're connected and we're kind of paying the same plus or minus 3 cents, 10 cents, that'll be the best outcome.
Yeah, one of the things that this, that kind of this action where they talk about connectivity, you know, it relates to kind of where it's cost effective. But I thought that was a good addition to kind of include and, you know, as you're looking at how to expand the grid and the network.
It's a double-edged kind of requirement, cost effectiveness. Because we really don't know what kind of industry will start up and be fruitful, you know, once affordable energy is in place,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that would make everything cost-effective in the future. We might not know it now. But the point is we need to have low-cost energy to begin with in order for anything to be possible.
It's an excellent point, and one thing that this plan does, and it was the first part of their presentation, they went through, this is just an appendix of the plan and kind of goes through the actions. The first part of the plan is kind of a comprehensive look ahead of what the emerging industries are going to be in Alaska, and goes through those industry sectors. So I think as we talked about kind of those anchor industries could help, you know, the, create efficiency with investment in energy infrastructure, especially in rural areas, you know, focusing on those industry clusters and public-private partnerships would be beneficial.
Good to see those emerging industries, or what they see as coming emerging industries, the list of those.
We can definitely, if you want, I mean, I can pause the meeting and kind of bring up the actual plan and quickly scroll through it if you want. This is just an absence of having a PowerPoint.
Yeah.
If that's beneficial.
You're going to have a synopsis of the list at our next meeting, you know.
Mm-hmm. But
I think it'll be better use of the time.
Okay. Very good. So, I'm in
Michael?
Yes.
Clay. I was just going to say that, yeah, it looks like there's a lot broader map there. And I don't think it would hurt if Michael Baker Black Beach just wanted to kind of maybe scan through there and said, hey, this kind of supplements or ties into one of those kind of five priorities that we boiled down to, that might be productive.
Yeah, we're happy to do that. And I don't have to continue down and kind of go through the list of individual actions for this meeting. I just wanted to make everyone aware that this occurred just because it was nice seeing it at the Energy Symposium, the kind of the connection between the two plans. But Clay, you're muted.
Oh, sorry. So the other thing I noticed is that in the committee of the whole, we'd have that circulated that questionnaire about kind of what are priorities. For example, you could rank cost of energy highest, reliability second, you know, environmental impact third, so forth. And I see a lot of the suggestions in there kind of imply an ordering, but it'd be kind of nice as we get towards the end product that we're kind of have some unifying themes, like these are the kind of the priorities. And so just another thought as we kind of converge and condense all this into a succinct plan.
Okay. Very good point. And the other thing that we're going to have to balance, a lot of these actions are broad, and, you know, how focused we want to make them for the plan. I think the short-term actions, we can be a little more specific, but then the long-term actions, you know, we can be a little more broad. And one of the other kind of trends that wasn't mentioned in this, but I know there's been kind of recent governor's press releases and kind of articles on kind of micro-nuclear, and that may be a longer-term play for the state, you know, 10 years or so. But I just was curious, too, with kind of recent news related to that, if there's any thoughts and, you know, if that should be added in terms of an action item.
I'm just going to give you a little visibility. So at Cordova Electric, we did a very comprehensive and very high participation customer survey of what their preferred energy resources were. And nuclear actually rose well to the surface there. There was it would almost exactly parallel the ASAP survey, where you have a lot of high support for most people, but then there's this kind of outlier where it's like 10%. It's the last choice they don't want to have. But that number changes as you educate. So I think it is important to first educate and to track the technology. And because nuclear offers heat, which is such an important energy piece in our northern climates, that I mean, it's got to be on the table. And at least for my community, I said, let's look at this. And that's a waterfront community in the context of Fukushima and other disasters. So I was surprised at the high levels of support and interest in nuclear, at least from our corner.
That's great. And I believe the legislation is referencing kind of streamline the siting requirements for micronuclear, microreactors. Are there any other barriers to kind of adoption? I mean, other than the obvious ones like cost and just it's an emerging technology. Any recommendations we could kind of include to help with the adaptation to it?
Well, I think education. I think there have been significant technology changes in nuclear with low enrichment fuels, and I think it's important for people to understand this isn't your grandparents' nuclear. There's been significant technology advancements that really changed the risk profile and the cost benefits and portability. So I think education is an important piece.
Okay. And then I see a chat message. I just want to recognize it. Jennifer, hi all. Miranda Strong is trying to get into this meeting by her phone. Do you have anyone in the waiting room? I don't think we do.
We do not. Jennifer, I'll email you and Miranda separately.
Any other comments on micronuclear from any other members or the public? You know, one of the things from the press release I was reading from the governor's office mentioned that I think the Air Force base might be kind of, they might have a pilot program with the first kind of micronuclear reactor in the state. It might not be operational until 2027. Any other kind of insight or lessons learned from that?
Is that the one at the base?
Yeah, I believe so. For the press release referenced.
Yeah. Go ahead, Clay.
The other one to keep an eye on is the opportunity for nuclear retrofits, especially coal plants. If you can keep the balance of plant there, the generators, the you know, the siting, the transmission lines from a coal plant, because it's a thermal energy source, you know, there's opportunities to retrofit coal-fired steam plants with nuclear at a you know, significant reduction in cost. So that's another opportunity to keep an eye on.
Okay. And so I just wanted to open this up, too, with, you know, the data kind of discussion that happened at the symposium and looking at the different energy sources. So for rural, you know, this relates to kind of the Black and Veatch models. You know, micronuclear sounds like an energy source that we definitely are interested in seeing, you know, how that may be adopted or evolve in the future for the modeling.
Yeah, I think definitely, micronuclear is something that's appropriate a technology to deploy for the rural region in particular. I think we can definitely really review the current status of the technology development, kind of the key rate of cost, and really understanding the status of maturity as well as the potential cost and benefit to the rural region if this can be deployed, especially focusing on if some of the infrastructure existing on some of the coal sites, it can be recycled, basically bring it back to reduce certain initial investment to really put that into service. I think that's related to what we would like to focus is that we our goal is to support the committee members to evaluate possible technology that you want us to evaluate and then create the scenarios that really kind of fits your idea of what a possible world looks like in the rural region. I think under different development paths versus kind of situations in the future, different technology may come up as more appropriate to really meet the load and the objective of the task force. I think we were in the kind of process of like other technologies that you want us to evaluate. Please maybe put a list on and try to see what are the interesting perspectives that you want to really consider for deployment into the rural region. But I think just also want to be mindful of the timeline as well as the range of engagement that Black Ridge was brought in so that we actually do not want to spend a lot of time and try to kind of really track down every interesting technology that could be potentially useful. We want to narrow down into the most really prominent technology that we think can really benefit the customers in the rural area significantly. So I think we would have the back and forth between kind of us and the committee members to really realize what is the thing that we want to do and how we're going to do it. I think just get the committee approval to really accomplish that.
And
thank you. Yeah, we have a really good comment from Alvin Bryce.
Sorry, but it's in the chat. Micronuclear is promising, but a grid system will still need to be developed to maximize efficiency for distribution. Microplants currently are overkill for individual villages, such as we primarily in rural Alaska. A grid is needed now for eventual emerging technologies. So, any comments or responses to that?
I would just mention one of the nice things about nuclear is that it isn't so much resource siting dependent. In other words, hydro, you're very fixed in where you can develop the resource and you have to transmit the energy from there. Wind is a little more flexible. Solar is a little more flexible, but nuclear, you can site it in an optimal location to where you can look at regional grids and maybe get some trade-offs with the cost of the transmission and distributions.
Okay. And then I wanted to recognize, too, we had some members join while we were talking. So Niels is here, and then Miranda was able to join.
Welcome, guys.
So, Clay and Andrew, if you want, I can return back to our action tracking sheet, or I can continue through the kind of action.
Let's do that. We have a half hour left.
Okay. These are the kind of the actions that were highlighted at the previous meeting, and my colleague Servio actually helped facilitate that meeting while I was in other meetings. Wanted to pause here, Andrew and Clay, if there's anything you wanted to highlight or just from the conversations we just had. So next steps for us, I think, in terms of the action tracking is we'll go through and kind of synthesize the actions that were in the economic plan and then identify the ones that are relevant for rural and then kind of have them for conversation. And then I don't think micronuclear is currently addressed in the tracking sheet, so we can go ahead and add that as well. And then Clay, you referenced that you kind of did a survey, and there was a strong response to kind of micronuclear. Are there any other kind of results from that survey that might be beneficial in terms of what Black and East should be modeling for rural?
I'd be glad to share the survey. Like I said, we had very high, almost 25% customer participation in most or all of the survey. And we did touch on, auxiliary opportunities like air source heat pumps, electric vehicles. We went through the whole suite of power generation. We went through what the customer's priorities are. So it was a pretty rich survey, and I'd be glad to share that.
Okay. Any other kind of comments on any of the topics that we just went over? And let me just pause here to where we are in the process. I think, the subcommittee is actually in excellent shape in kind of identifying, the top level actions, and then now we're integrating with the other state plan, and we're kind of building a robust profile that's kind of in step across the state. And we kind of zeroed in on the energy resources that we want to start modeling. So I think we're in a great place. In terms of next steps and assignments. So this usually it's the group's not as quiet today. So the other kind of thing that's worth mentioning too is just the contractor team. We're compiling a list of research requests across all the subcommittees, and we we're kind of sharing that internally with each other and coordinating with the AEA and, you know, the governor's office of all the requests from the subcommittees and additional research that's needed. So I just wanted to mention that we're kind of meeting later today to kind of review and finalize that list. So just pausing here, if you feel there's any other kind of research needed or requests, we can talk about that now. So, hearing none, I hope that's a vote in confidence of us and where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Katie, you have a comment. It might be worth noting that the Advanced Nuclear Working Group led by the university and exploring applicability of this technology throughout Alaska, including the need for immediate and sustained public involvement education. So we can definitely follow up. I know, you know, the chancellor is part of the task force, and they are meeting this Monday, the data subcommittee. He'll be on that call. We can kind of ask him to, and it's done in close coordination with ACEP. So I just want to take this moment and kind of turn it over to our co-chairs in terms of the agenda and the action items. I think if there's no other actions or things we wanted to discuss, I know with the agenda kind of just had the next steps and assignments and the next meeting. So, hey, Niels?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. And I realize that I have been almost non-participatory in this. any of these calls, so I have no idea, you know, what I'm stepping into. But that's also not unusual, I think, for me at this point. Maybe to the co-chairs, and you, Michael, to what extent, has this group kind of discussed what does parity or equity look like? You know, when we're thinking about rural, what does rural investment and cost look like relative to other areas of the state? And are there, have you worked out like a principle or goal or anything kind of on that front? And it's come up in a few different conversations that I've had recently. And so I just wonder where this group's at.
So I do have a kind of clarifying comment related to that. I know you also are on the kind of incentives and subsidies subcommittee, and a lot of times when we talk about equity, that may refer to federal grants and disadvantaged communities and the White House's Justice 40 initiative, where you kind of have to take that in consideration with federal funding. Is that the conversations you're having, or are they more local and specific in terms of, you know, Alaska, you know, state-level issues?
Yeah, I think it's more state level issues, and I think Andrew, you brought up kind of PCE and, you know, equalizing costs between rural and urban. I think it's, you know, what's the level of investment, you know, that we're thinking about for rural compared to the rail belt. If the state could get to 10 cents kilowatt hour by just making an investment in the rail belt or in a population center, like how has this group thought about, you know, what should that look like for the rest of the state?
For my part, Niels, I would say we haven't really had that discussion. We've talked about drivers and a goal, but we haven't really talked about what parity looks like. I kind of like to hear your thoughts, actually, but I would just say for my part that when we're looking at business development, economic opportunity, a lot of times it depends on what the resource is, and that price of power can be an important part of the tipping point. So maybe your rural rate is twice the rail belt rate, but it's still, it's not five times, and that puts it within reach of being able to support business or a particular economy in your community or region. So But I'd like to hear your thoughts if you've heard some discussions.
Yeah. I know, I thought it came up last week, you know, about, you know, something like a postage stamp rate or a postage stamp approach. So I'm interested in that and how it would affect or how rural communities would think about it. But I think even more importantly, you know, as we're identifying actions between Rail Belt Rural and Coastal, and I can imagine a lot of those are, there should be, you know, this amount of investment into this project, and that would make the most difference. And I think for rural, I could imagine where you've got a smaller population base, you know, those investments might look very different than where there's a large population base. And I think, and we've also had conversations, I think, at the task force level about what does, so, you know, basically, yes, lower cost energy, but not at the expense of, or not leaving any community behind. So is it just low cost at the statewide level, or do we have, you know, just as much emphasis on lowering costs in rural Alaska as we do on lowering costs elsewhere? I think in terms of my opinion, I think my questions are my answer. I think we should be working toward lowering costs just as much in rural Alaska as we are anywhere else in the state. And we can't move to a low cost future that doesn't bring all communities with us.
That's a good synopsis right there. I agree with it.
I do too. And I think, and I'm just going to interject a couple other things because it's kind of just systemic thinking. There's an opportunity many times in rural communities or for greenfields projects to skip several levels of technology. And it's why I think innovation is such a critical part of the solution. Right now, for example, maybe it isn't feasible to produce natural gas at scale. So in a small community, but if you look at the different technologies and how they're evolving, that may not be the case in 5 years or 10 years. So, you know, the opportunity for very rich sensor and automated and remotely accessible systems offers an opportunity for a very remote community with communications to have an extremely efficient and well operated and maintained plant with some, you know, with some modern technologies. So I think there are ways that rural communities can get rates that are, you know, can get a lot closer to parity. But I agree with the goal. The goal is to drive towards parity. And while there's some serious disadvantages for remote communities, again, for Cordova, we didn't leap forward to current technology to get where we are. We jumped a couple generations and ended up on the edge of new technologies. And those technologies are evolving so fast, I think innovation is going to really provide some opportunities. The other comment is that you really have to, the communities need a critical mass and the right engagement, but also you have to bring the right resources to them. You can't come in with general resources and general perspectives and solve problems. You have to get the right people and the right solutions on the ground to really reach parity, or you can actually move the other way and let drive costs up.
Neil, you mentioned kind of the postage stamp rate versus the PCE rate. Just for kind of everyone's benefit, could you explain that just a little, just in case others aren't familiar with that concept?
Let me check the participant list and see who I might offend with my explanation.
Can I see that, Neil?
Yeah, and then I've got some thoughts on it, but yeah, go ahead, Clay.
Because we had a case example where me, Glenn, two or three other stakeholders had a chance to go to Arctic Canada, Western Canada, where they had implemented a postage stamp rate for electricity, only for electricity. So if I remember right, it was 12 cents a kilowatt hour. And they had some serious problems with it because you had people switching from their $6 and $7 a gallon diesel fuel to electric heating because it was subsidized and they had a postage stamp rate. But you're only getting 30 or 40% of the energy efficiency as if they put the fuel oil right into their Toyo stoves. And so it actually just multiplied the subsidy required by the state for the community, because now their diesel fuel prices are going through the roof for the electric company and very inefficiently heating those homes that were. So that's something that I've been wanting to mention and trying to map back the incentives. You have to really be careful about unintended consequences and where the wrong incentives can take you.
Yeah. I think it's worth, it's good to have those examples, right? Greenland has a postage stamp rate. And basically, I think the difference in my mind is, PCE is, the state has set aside investment into an endowment that makes available funds for a subsidy to some communities in the state. That's a kind of a tailored, focused effort to subsidize costs. But it doesn't necessarily do anything more different than that. A postage stamp rate, as I understand it, is basically taking all the costs across the state and making them one, that everybody pays the same rate, kind of evened out between all providers. And so Anchorage's, for instance, costs go up and Kwikluk's costs go down, but they're equalized in really direct ways. And they do, I think, to Clay's point, there would be some weird and different kinds of incentives in different directions, right? You could, at an individual, at a consumer level, maybe you're not so, you don't have to worry so much about how much you use or what costs are. Now that you're paying a lower rate than you were before. But I think the maybe more interesting thing to think about is that it would directly, I think there would be greater incentives to make investments into lowering costs in rural Alaska. And everywhere else in the state that are experiencing lower costs would rush to support those kinds of initiatives. Because it would, the result would bring down everybody's costs, including theirs. So I think it's interesting to kind of play with and think about, who would respond to what kind of incentive.
Well, and I'll just add that that particular example was an example of how a postage stamp implementation had some unintended consequences, and it was just meant to advise you have to be careful with it, but the outcome is fantastic because that's kind of the holy grail, right? To have a low cost, energy in every region of the state. And I would suggest ASEP especially might have some examples where there are other postage stamps that rates that were managed and structured a little more carefully where they had, much better outcomes.
If the state was to explore that, what would be some of the hurdles to implementation? Would it be the kind of the data gaps and how they're tracking this, or do you think the current PCE program, they're managing that data, that you could roll this out? And this is just me being ignorant because of the data and how it's being tracked.
Yeah, I think the more of the challenges would be coming from the public, especially from the urban, the rail belt areas. They wouldn't want to be raising their rates, This should have been done way back when all of the Southeast and the rail belt projects were being funded in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and the rural legislatures made an agreement to fund them as long as PCE was formed. What Neil said should have been implemented back then, not PCE, If that had been implemented then, I think rural projects would have been funded a lot quicker, faster, so that now we wouldn't have this issue, 50 years after the fact.
Yeah. I think Andrew's exactly right in terms of what the challenge would be, a public outcry. But there's ways, you plan for that, right? But what are the mitigation efforts needed by the state to address the pain that, some portion of the public would experience? And what's a transition plan? So if that hurts in the first year and hurts less in the second year, you could really sketch that out for, how do we manage that over time and make it more publicly acceptable, even if you've got a plan for making investments elsewhere and, to lower costs overall. I think it's, in the context of rural, it's probably something to be thinking about. Nick, I didn't mean to raise your hand up, and I didn't.
Okay, we have Nick holding his hand up.
Yeah, I just had a, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Just had a quick question. I thought the fascinating discussion about the, postage rates, and in some places, they've also, not sure if they use it in combination with a postage rate, but a tiered rating system, so that as you use more energy, more electricity in this case, the rate goes up, right? So there's an incentive to reduce your consumption, to the point that was made earlier that the urban users would, benefit from energy conservation, in other areas as well as investments. So some of the investments could go into energy conservation and efficiency, and then so that would create an incentive in combination with the postage rate concept, right? Because it was an earlier, I think, reference where, people started to replace their oil heating with, or diesel, heating with, electrical, which then sort of, accelerated the amount of, or increased the amount of, subsidies or the rate using that low rate. And this would sort of, this could also, potentially counteract that. Over.
Yeah, no, I think that's perfect. I appreciate that. This is Nils. I think that would immediately address the, that initial concern or question about what would consumers do. Some tiering would make a lot of sense.
We can certainly pull examples of that, tiered pricing systems. So I know just my energy bill is tiered, so. Any other questions or comments? Clay, I saw you came up on screen really quick.
I'm trying not to dominate the conversation, but part of the education process and around the tiered rate is the holistic change that happens if you can reduce the energy prices in rural Alaska. When you can start having economies in remote areas that support workforce development, support local economies, that takes pressures off the state and off of rail belt ratepayers and other ways. And it also feeds into the urban economy, which is still largely driven by remote area resources. So if you can tackle, social issues with local prosperity, education, health, workforce development, and so forth, that kind of changes the equation for the whole state. So it's important to look at not only holistic problems, but holistic solutions. So
that's a great point. I think it's timely, too, with the kind of the economic development plan and making that integration to those programs noted in there.
Yeah, we just heard from the SEDS earlier today, right, in the symposium, and this kind of player, and that's exactly what, Andrew has been talking about with, PCE, like how do we make doing business in rural Alaska more, easier? And lowering the transactional cost is, such a basic starting point. So you could really see rural communities thrive and flourish under that scenario, which should have, a broader economic benefit and impact, and including to the rest of the state.
We have a few minutes before our scheduled end, but we should do some assignment discussion. Michael?
All right. We will, and I just wanted to take a moment to pause. I see someone is typing in the comments. We can quickly go through the agenda assignments, but I just want to be mindful of that too. Let me share. Just member assignments. I think Michael Baker, we're happy to take the kind of the actions that were identified from, you know, the SEZ plan that align with rural and kind of add them just for consideration to the action tracking sheet. And with the next meeting, we can decide if, the, you know, if there's going to be revisions to the language or, you know, have them be fully included. And then we can do, we can also add as an action kind of the research on tiered systems if you would like. It seems like you may have some of that research though. Is that correct, or? So, and then we'll also do follow up with the university, you know, about the Advanced Nuclear Working Group. So, any other kind of member assignments that you, the co-chairs would like to assign, follow up? I know we had a great discussion on the postage rate discussion, and there might be further coordination with the incentives and subsidies subcommittee.
Michael, I think I offered to share that customer survey, and I'll just check and make sure that we're comfortable that there's nothing confidential or anything we can't share there, but I think we've already published that. The other thought I had, and this is back to the discussion and Neil's points about thinking holistically, is it's really interesting when you look at the stack of what the costs, the state of Alaska's costs are, healthcare dominating, closely followed by education, and those two combined just completely overwhelm the rest of expenditures. So I had an interesting conversation from someone from Sakhalin Island, and their cost per capita to deliver all services is about $10,000 per capita. And I did a quick napkin math, and in Cordova, it's about $12,000 per citizen. That's the total cost of all the services you provide. And those are some interesting metrics to look at where really those costs reside. And, for example, if you start pulling a lever on your clinic and school energy costs, That can be repurposed into actually delivering healthcare and the education piece. So I don't know what kind of data, but that might be something AML or Nails, as you kind of look at, you know, community level economies, how that fits, I guess.
Neil, any response to that?
It sounds like I've got some work to do. That's what I get, joining late, bringing up big topics, signing up, coach.
Okay. I think that's all we had on terms of our action items and follow-up. I'll kind of turn it back over to our co-chairs, Andrew and Clay.
No, I don't have anything else. Clay?
Yeah, I don't either. Thank you.
Okay. And then for our next meeting date, I believe, scheduled August 24th. So,
Clay, I won't be able to make this. I might maybe a half hour late. Depends on how that day goes. I'll be at the Kenai.
I'm just pulling up my calendar here. We have the Alaska Power Association annual meeting over, in Valdez, and it looks like I've got a block. Looks like I have a hole in the schedule. I'll be able to participate in that whole meeting.
Okay, great.
Okay, great. So I'll leave it to you to close the meeting out, but someone just put in a comment, so maybe you want to pause here. On a holistic note, there are potential anchor energy users in rural Alaska, such as plus minus 30-year ongoing project at Dunlin, who may also be potential catalysts for energy expansion, if not P3 partners, for some cap cost increase to cost benefit for energy and rural economic engine. More rural development could be possible with a viable energy system. So.
Very good comment.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Clay, Andrew, if you want to adjourn the meeting, I'm leaving it in your hands.
Okay, let's adjourn the meeting. Time now is 1:58 p.m. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.